Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, sponsored by Night Guard Solar. Your guaranteed solar power protection against nighttime predators. Visit them online at nightguard.com. Go ahead and go visit them right now. www.niteguard.com, nightguard.com. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Thursday, April 22nd. That means it's Earth Day today. And I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.net. That's chickenwhisperer.net. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, and, of course, sign up for our monthly newsletter, The Chicken Scratch. So go ahead and visit chickenwhisperer.net, and while you're there, pick up some Chicken Whisperer gear, like t-shirts, mouse pads, mugs, keychains, and hats. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join the live chicken chat that's going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button there at our homepage at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time with others around the world that love backyard poultry and living a self-sufficient lifestyle and want to learn more about doing both. I also want to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and be on our friends list at Blog Talk Radio. Hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, of course, sponsored by Night Guard Solar. We'll be back right after this break and bring on my wonderful co-host, Pat Foreman. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
There will always be something that will love your chickens more than you. That's why I use Night Guard Solar to protect my flock. Night Guard Solar has successfully been manufacturing and selling Night Guard Solar lights for over 12 years and offers a one-year warranty and complete money-back guarantee. No waiting. Night Guard Solar will be shipped within 48 hours of your order. Order your Night Guard Solar lights today at nightguard.com. That's NiteGuard.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFRadio.com. That's GQFRadio.com. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in just any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends and neighbors with your very own custom labeled egg carton from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com and save 10% off your entire order by using the coupon code WHISPER.
Night Guard Solar would like to extend a special introductory offer to all the Chicken Whisperer listeners. Get four Night Guard Solar lights for just $100 plus shipping. That's a savings of $20. All you have to do is mention the coupon code WHISPER when you call an order. Take advantage of this great special right now by calling 1-800-328-6647. That's 1-800-328-6647, or visit them online at nightguard.com. That's NITEGUARD.com.
Presenting the Clapper. Let your appliances turn on and off just by clapping.
Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off.
The Clapper.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today is April 22nd, which means it is Earth Day. What are you doing today to honor Mother Earth? And speaking of that, it's time to welcome my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate, and of course, probably the poster child of honoring Mother Earth in many ways, Pat Forman. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Okay, I've been practicing this. Happy birthday, Andy.
Thank you so much.
I know. Would you like to hear the opera version?
Maybe at the end of the show, Pat. I want to keep our listeners.
I mean, really. I would not do that for just anybody. So there you have it. That's how much I honor you, is to cluck a happy birthday.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you very much. We did now. I just want to check my volume because it says I am too low and Pat is real loud. But it looks like I've got a complete and awesome connection. So let me go ahead and check everything else here before we get started with the show. I'm not sure what else that I can do. Hang on one second. Let me check one more thing here. All righty. And of course, I may actually just try to reboot here in a second when we welcome our special guest and start talking about our topic today, which is composting. And so we'll talk about kind of everything we do here.
Whisper, composting is part of it, certainly, but we're talking about biomass, which is quite a bit even more than composting, about biofuels, biomass and biofuels.
Very good.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area. Oh my God, it's going to change the future, the way we can use different plants and plant materials and sunlight to create energy. So Richard Frudenberger is going to just be awesome in this subject, and I learned so much getting ready for it. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, but they're saying they can't hear me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and if you have some chickens in the news, or if you want to, let me see if Richard's here. We'll go ahead and bring Richard on. Let me go over to the he hadn't called in quite yet. So do you have any chickens in the news while I go ahead and try to reboot my call-in system?
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't have – I'm in Indiana right now. I'm at my mother's apartment at Friends Fellowship. And today – yesterday was her 92nd birthday.
Wow.
Yeah, hold on just a – well, anyway, it's her 92nd birthday, and what's so bizarre is that what's so bizarre is that my aunt died on her birthday. The funeral is today, and what's even more amazing is that 12 years ago, My grandmother, my mother's mother, died on her birthday, and her funeral was the day after. So isn't that just an amazing coincidence and timing? I mean, I'm just astounded at it. But my aunt was 98 years old. She lived quite a wonderful life, and whenever I think of her, she's always giggling. It's just a really happy life. In fact, at the calling last night, we were all just, of course, telling stories. Family came in from California. They came in from from Michigan. Had some come down. Of course, I came up from Virginia. So it was the first time we'd been together in about 10 years. So it ended up being quite a nice family party. Oh, sorry about that. We're having little challenges here. So anyway, we sat around and just told jokes and stories at the funeral home and wonderful stories that we hadn't heard from each other before. And then we went out and had pizza afterwards. So it was wonderful. Again, we had two full tables and just had a great time sharing more stories, looking over old photographs, and watching the pieces there. Are you back, Andy? Did you get rebooted?
I am. Can you hear me better now? How about you? I know you can probably hear me, but let's do a sound check again in the chat room to see what our sound is. Normally, we don't have too many problems when we're in our studio when we're on the road. And again, speaking of that, I want to remind everybody, we will have a broadcast show this Saturday. This Saturday at 9 a.m., we'll be broadcasting live at the Roswell Garden. And it's a big event here in, he's saying it's actually worse. And Hidden Acre Quail says that it's not worse, and it's horrible. So I'm gonna try one more time because it's way worse. And take it away, Pat. I'll keep working on the system on this end.
Oh, okay. Well, what this, I'm just going to be a little narcissistic here and talk about my family, if that's okay. Because we had such a wonderful time last night. We are celebrating my aunt's passing instead of necessarily mourning it. She lived to be 98 years old. She was in a wheelchair, oh my gosh, probably the last four decades. And always happy. She was one of these in-the-moment, core happy people, and I learned so much from her. My Aunt Josephine, even she had Alzheimer's or a little bit of a mental impairment before, had no short-term memory. So we would come and see her and say hi, and she'd just be tickled that we would be there, and then she'd say, now who are you again? And she'd be equally tickled to see us again. And it was just an amazing example of how just being in the moment. And then she probably could have passed on several months earlier. The last few months were pretty challenging. But she had a great life. I've certainly reconnected with my family through it, and I'm just so grateful to have come from such an interesting and broad and diverse family. So are you back now?
I think so. How about just do another sound check? What do I sound like, Pat? How do I sound to you?
No, that's much better. I'm sure that my rocking you happy birthday kind of blew out your system. I'm so sorry about that. I'll remember that next year. Yeah.
And we'll do another sound check in the chat room. Let everybody know, because that's always the best way to do it. Live radio, live chat, and live video. So they can just let us know how we're coming in sound. Now, like I said, this is high tech, and sometimes we've got issues that we got to deal with. So, you know, we have things we can check on this end. So thank you very much for letting us know. But, no, thank you. I attended a funeral as well this past Sunday. Jen's uncle passed away. And you're right. A lot of things. Funerals are very interesting. And you get to see a lot of people, unfortunately, that you hadn't seen in a while. It's one of those things that gets people together. For better or for worse, but you're right. You see a lot of folks. You see a lot of different folks. You have great conversations. You reminisce about the past, and so it's really, really interesting how funerals can bring folks together, and at least for a couple of days for a lot of people, kind of change your outlook on life. But then we kind of sometimes get back in that same type of rut a lot of times, unfortunately. But I know exactly what you're talking about when, you know, you sometimes attend funerals. And I think a funeral, you know, not to give a big gloomer on Earth Day or anything, but I think it should be a celebration of life, not a mourning of death. I would love for no tears to be shed at my funeral. I want laughter and smiles and joy and my favorite songs played and thinking about all the things that we had accomplished in life and a celebration, not a sad, gloomy day. That's how I want mine to be.
Yeah, well, I've got my funeral already planned out, Whisper, and here's what I want is I want there to be a little session where everyone kind of tells stories or whatever memories they have, and I want them to beat their breasts and pull their hair and cry and sob, and then we're going to have a rock band come and an open bar with live music and live dancing, and everyone will just have this huge celebration. So, and I'm sure I'll be there
band?
In the corner. Yeah. Yeah, rock and swing.
Bar, my goodness.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I just want a big party. might even have some fireworks.
That sounds great.
That's the way I want to go out. Yeah, I think we should have funerals. And at least I think our family's changed a little bit because we are quite long lived in my family generally. But I think instead celebrate the life and respect the transition back to source rather than just being doom and gloom. And of course we miss them. It's hard to hug a ghost, but I don't think they're really gone in my belief system. So. Back to source, and they're probably still with us, hanging over our shoulder and directing us in so many ways. So, anyway.
I don't know if you noticed in the chat room, but Eat Local Texas says they want to be composted in the garden when they leave the earth. So, and somebody was concurring that was a great idea. So I know that they do have green funerals now, and that's really, really taking off as well. Why are we talking about? I guess I started this conversation. About you know people you can see and things that can be talked about and experiences you can have at funerals. You and I both attended one this week, so I guess that's how we kind of got started on that. So, but moving on to happier and healthier things and whatnot. Somebody in the chat room wanted me to repeat what I talked about this weekend in Roswell because I was breaking up earlier. But we do occasionally have Saturday shows. And this Saturday, in fact, Roswell, the Master Gardeners of Roswell, the Roswell Garden Club, and it's called the Roswell Garden Fair, and there's going to be all kinds of activities, rain or shine. I was told that this is going to take place this Saturday in Roswell, and we will be broadcasting live on location from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. We may have some special gardening guests that we'll be interviewing there on the radio show this Saturday. So you can tune in here, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Blog Talk Radio. We'll be broadcasting live. You can come out and see us. And depending on how many people were there, we may have some live chicken trivia there on location. And then after that wraps up, we may be answering some questions, meet and greet there in Roswell. Handing out maybe some autographed pictures and some things like that. And then I think me and Jen at that point are going to break away, and we're heading up to North Georgia to visit my dad and do some birthday celebration up there. So that's kind of what I got planned for the weekend. And, of course, to remind everybody, yes, today is Earth Day, April 22nd. It is actually 40 years old. I am 41. That's all about the only way I can remember that, 1970. They came out with Earth Day on April 22nd, and so what a great show we have today on Earth Day, talking about biomass and composting. Looks like we've got Richard here that's called in, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him live and join him to the radio show. Folks, I want to welcome Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, and he joins us really the second and fourth Thursday of every month, bringing us all kinds of great information about living a more self-sustaining lifestyle. So I urge you to get your pen and paper out because you always learn a lot on Thursdays when Richard is here. Richard, welcome to the show.
Well, nice to be here, especially on such a momentous occasion as the 40th anniversary of Earth Day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. I remember the very first one, don't you, Richard?
Yeah, actually, I guess I have to admit that I do.
Yeah,
I can't say that I do. I was 1 year old, having my 1 year birthday. I can't say that I remember much at all. But that's not saying much because I can't remember really a lot after about a week. So
that that might be good. I don't know.
In some cases, I'm sure it is.
Well, just stay in the moment. Well, Richard, today you're gonna talk with us about this amazing area of biofuels. And my goodness, as I started looking into this, I hadn't realized how broad and depth and so many ways that biofuels now are starting to emerge, not only into our day-to-day use, but also in the research area. So why don't you go ahead and start with it and see where it goes?
Yeah, okay. Actually, Andy had said something about composting, but we may have had a little cross-wire scheduling there, but I think that's going to be the following conversation. But I'll talk about biofuels now because that's what I'm prepared to do, and I think
I caused a little confusion there. Composting is next week, next session that he's with us, but although composting can be used to create biofuels, so there's a little bit of an overlap between composting and biofuels. So they're all processes.
Yeah, exactly. And the biofuels is so interesting because it's really come into its own in the past 5 or so years. I mean, I remember talking about age-old practices. I remember doing some of this stuff in the late 70s and early 80s, and people just thought it was ridiculous. I mean, why would you want to replace gasoline with anything if gasoline was fairly inexpensive relatively, and it was available and it did all that good stuff. But now in 2008, I believe, I was paying in our area here because we had a shortage and a lack of delivery. We were paying about $4.25 a gallon for regular gas for about a month or maybe 5 weeks, in September, I believe it was, of 2008. So, this price fluctuation and this supply and demand thing isn't going to go away anytime soon. And so in about 5 or 6 years time here, in the past 5 or 6 years, people have really started to look at alternatives to traditional liquid fuels. And, one of them is a biofuel called biodiesel, which is a replacement for diesel fuel. And the other is, as a liquid fuel, is ethyl alcohol or ethanol, which we're now using, many of us, as a 10% blend in our regular gasoline, even though we may not realize it. And the truck I drive, the Ford Ranger I drive, is factory made, along with about 7.5 million other vehicles on the road today, factory made to accept either alcohol or gasoline or any blend of the two. And we buy that as E85. E85 is the pump ready stuff that comes out of the pump in some stations to just go right into your flex fuel vehicle. And that's just the liquid fuels. And I know we're going to also talk about the other types of stationary fuels that that can replace things like coal natural gas and fuel oil and all the other stuff, including wood. I mean, wood is a biofuel. Most people have burned wood one time or the other. Some people still use it as their primary heating source. I mean, even here where I live in the mountains, a lot of people still use wood, including myself. I mean, I think I would say wood is my primary fuel, and the backup propane is only, when I haven't cut enough wood, or when we have a extremely cold night and gotta pump a little heat into rooms that aren't around the fire area. But I think biofuels are really a good option for people because they are essentially fuels that that are renewable. You can replace them by either growing them yourself or by just culling surplus from all the other processes we use in our modern society. There's really so much waste that there is fuel available to be for the taking if you know how to use it.
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things I found, Richard, with the biofuels, looking into them, is that green diesel fuel can come from feedstock, which includes even algae. Certainly canola oil and a thing called salicornia, which I hadn't heard of. So there are a lot of different things can go in to make this ethyl alcohol or ethanol, and the whole algae area is just, excuse the expression, kind of blooming when it comes to the potential energy sources.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about the liquid fuels first, because they're the liquids are really sort of the tough nut to crack, because there's so much energy, there's so much density of energy in a liquid component as opposed to a solid component, that it's really a magic fuel. I mean, gasoline, petroleum, diesel fuel, all the derivatives of petroleum, like diesel fuel and gasoline and kerosene and all that kind of thing, are all a really high density fuel. And it's one thing to have a spot on a flat piece of ground with a roof over it, and you can generate power to, you know, generate electricity or make heat or cut wood or whatever you want to do. But when you can get that fuel into a form in which you can put it in a tank and drive for 400 or 500 miles before refueling, that's really almost miraculous. And that's the first thing that's going to go away. I mean, that whole ability to be mobile with it. So we have two options really. Make it real easy. We have a diesel engine option, which is the biodiesels, and the straight vegetable oil. That's another option with the diesel engines. And then with the gasoline engine, you have the ethanol or ethyl alcohol, which is actually a distillation process, and the same exact process that's used to make liquors and fortified spirits, and to some extent the beers and the wines. But to make it real clear, these are not fuels are not drinkable, potable things. We actually
know.
At some point in the process, you by law you have to put in about 2%. There's rules and regulations, but easy definition is 2% kerosene or naphtha or unleaded gasoline, not for fuel, but just to make it so nasty that you can't drink it. Obviously, there'd be some problems if we stored large amounts of potable alcohol in tanks and in gas tanks of cars and trucks. You know, people could siphon it out. So you are required to add a little bit of something poisonous to make it impotable or non-drinkable. But the alcohol fuel, that's an area of a lot of controversy now, because it would appear as if we are stealing land and stealing food to make fuel. Well, I mean, if you wanted to do that, you could, but that's not exactly what's happening. The kind of corn that we feed to people, the corn that goes into tortillas and the corn that goes into the food stocks and whatever, is not the same corn that we give to cattle and we grow for fuel. I mean, the corn we grow for fuel is a very starchy, not a very tasteful corn. And the other even bigger picture is that corn is not the only, in fact, it's one of the very, very many other types of crops that can be used to make alcohol. So, you know, while we're scrambling around using corn, and that's mainly because of the corn lobby from the states that do make corn, they have lobbied the government to make alcohol out of the corn they grow. We could also make alcohol, and do make alcohol out of sugar crops like sugar cane, sugar beets, other types of sugar-based crops, and other types of starch-based crops, potatoes and wheats and barleys and artichokes and all sorts of other things that can be grown on very marginal land, unlike corn, which really needs sort of decent land to grow on. And also make alcohol out of the somewhere in the neighborhood of, depending on what sources you look at, somewhere between 28% and 34% of our total food stream goes right into the garbage pail. In other words, it's not used. It either rots or it's thrown out, or it's thrown out and then it rots. If we can catch it before it rots, we can make alcohol out of it, and that's an area that most people don't even realize. It's a very wasteful stream we have going here, and that can be changed. I should have taken my notes here, but I think about less than 20% of the corn that we produce goes to making alcohol for our fuels, and if we would use the other resources we have besides corn, in the waste areas and in the sugar crops we may have, at waste apples in our area, fruits and vegetables and culled crops and what's left in the field and stuff that's too far gone to eat but not quite too far gone to make fuel out of, that number could decrease dramatically. So that's one area that requires distillation. It actually requires fermentation and then distillation, and does require some energy input in the way of heat. But all this does work out if it's done carefully. Contrary to a lot of the reports that you see, there are some pretty pretty decently prepared reports that indicate that alcohol or fuel ethanol uses up more energy than it gives back. But that's if it's not done carefully. If it's done carefully, that is not the case. And the other point I want to make is that this fuel alcohol has such a high octane level that if engines were optimized to burn it, they would be so much more efficient than they are now on gasoline, and also so much more cleaner. Although we have come forward in the past 40 years since the onset of Earth Day, we have come forward to the point where the old engines that I was testing back in the late 70s and early 80s, when alcohol made a huge difference, that way they wouldn't make that much of a difference now because we run so much more cleaner engines, but they still would run cleaner. Ethanol is a very, very clean burning fuel. So, I mean, at this point, I'll just sort of stop talking about ethanol, and we can shift into the diesel engines, which make even more of a difference because in Europe, for example, the diesel technology has improved and the fuels have improved to the extent that a lot more people are using diesel engines, and I think we're going to see that to be the case here in the States probably over the next 10 years because they are becoming much cleaner engines. Now, with a diesel engine, and you'll see Volkswagens, the VW TDIs are a little pricey, but they are becoming popular. Mercedes-Benz, there's a few other diesels out there, and especially in the large truck or even in the pickup truck series, there's more diesel engines. Diesel fuel can be replaced with either straight vegetable oil, just canola, corn oil. There's all sorts of peanut oils, all sorts of vegetable oils. There's a whole bunch of them, really a list of 21 or 26 different oils that make decent diesel fuel, and probably about four or five of them make excellent diesel fuel. And all these are growable, or most of these are growable within the continental U.S., or North America. I mean, even, you know, whatever, I mean, Canada, U.S., and the northern Central American states areas.
Richard, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When Carl Hammer up at the Vermont Compost Company was on our show, he was so proud and told us that he had converted all his compost equipment, the front end loaders and the Bobcats. He had converted them all to used cooking oil that he got from the local restaurants.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And he had it delivered in these huge tubs, I guess you'd say almost like containers, but apparently that's a pretty easy conversion process.
Yeah, there's about six different companies that I'm aware of. You can do homemade conversions as well, but there's about six different companies here in the States that manufacture the heat exchangers and the piping and the sell you the pumps and everything that are necessary to convert your normal diesel engine into a straight vegetable oil engine. And really the only thing you're doing with it is filtering it and heating it. And the preheating is key to the whole thing. It will work unheated. On a normal day that's not cold, not freezing, at say 60 degrees Fahrenheit, it will work without preheating. But it is not, for the longevity of the engine, it is much better to preheat it because that thins it out, that reduces, that changes the viscosity to make it comparable with diesel fuel. And as I said in the past, Mercedes-Benz has a long history of selling trucks in China. They started in China and they have brought the technology to South America. We don't see it here because there's not as much market, but in third world or developing nations, which China was one in the post-war period. In the post-war period when Mercedes was selling their trucks in the late 40s, I guess their factory wasn't rebuilt till 48 or so, but anyway, they were selling these trucks in other countries that didn't have any options. I mean, they had no fuel, so they were growing their own peanuts to press into fuel to use in the Mercedes truck. So Mercedes, as one example, I mean, there's other examples, but Mercedes has had a long history in this thing. When I was in Brazil in the early 80s, they were using a special pinon oil, which is a tree that grows down there. They squish the nut of the tree, make the oil, and so that was their biofuel for the diesels, and for the gasoline engines they were using the ethanol. But the straight vegetable oil is one option, and I think in many ways it's, especially for someone growing their own fuel, it is the better option. The other option is to go with biodiesel, which is a chemical conversion of the same vegetable oil, or animal fats. You can use rendered fats. It will do the same thing. You can convert that through a process called transesterification, which requires a little bit of methyl alcohol and a potassium hydride material or some other equivalent to make that transesterification work. And all that does is breaks down the molecular structure of the vegetable oil to more closely replicate the structure of standard diesel oil. And so in one case, you're actually making conversions on the engine to make it use the fuel. In the other case, you're making conversions on the fuel to put it into the engine, to which, by the way, you really do not need to make any modifications. You can burn the biodiesel directly in a factory prepped or a factory available diesel engine without any changes. So that's really two different approaches. And the good thing about the biodiesel is that it can be batch made. I mean, you really a lot of these people who use it make it in 55-gallon drums in their garage. The chemicals aren't really that expensive, and it's there are some safety precautions just as you have with any process, but it's not extremely toxic, and with a little care, it's you know perfectly safe. And
you're saying we could even grow some of our own oils and plants and press them, put up a little shop, maybe a local community kind of thing, and be able to be fuel self-sufficient with some of these biofuels. I mean, if they can go to third world countries,
That's what happens exactly. It's perfect for a cooperative venture. In fact, many local co-ops, they're actually with arms of the already organized co-ops are going into just the fuel processing co-ops and making their own fuel by cooperatively purchasing the required equipment, the tanks and the pumps and the and some of the filtration equipment and the heating equipment. Yes, we can either collect the used vegetable oil from the McDonald's and the fish fry places and the Mexican restaurants and the other places that tend to use a lot of fried foods. Either that can be done, or in some cases, I've seen virgin, ready to eat or ready to use large volume vegetable oils, brand new at Costco, a few pennies cheaper than you could, you know, buy this or process the stuff by collecting it from the restaurant. So it's either way you go, or by growing it yourself. And there are small scale presses now being developed to be able to press this stuff and get the oil out of it. And by the way, the residue after it's pressed is usable, is compostable and usable for other things as fuel or whatever. So the cycle is a closed circle. There's no waste. I mean, you can in the one process of making biodiesel, you actually get a glycerin out of it, which you can make soap out of. And in the process,
glycerol,
of pressing,
isn't it? I mean, isn't it a lot of it like glycol? That's what it is.
It's glycol. It's very crude, though. It has to be. It can't be. You can't use it directly. I mean, you've got to clean it and filter it and perfume mask its odor so you can make soap out of it. But it's a great industrial soap, and that's also a cash flow stream for people who do this kind of thing. They sell it as an industrial soap. And they recycle all the methanol they use in the process is recycled and used over again. The heat is recycled and used in the next batch. I mean, it's all a closed circle. I mean, people are very aware of this, and so it works out real well. I mean, you know, 20 years ago when people were doing this stuff, it wouldn't have been so closed. I mean, they would have gotten rid of the glycerol and tried to dump it in the landfill or something. But now we really need to use every bit over again. So it's all a nice tight closed green circle, and it works out real well.
Well, listen, Richard. Talking about green circles, we want to just take a short commercial break, and when we come back, then we'll continue on talking about biofuels and kind of complete the circle on how many other ways there are to get our energies. You know, we're not really lacking, I think, energy in the world. We're lacking imagination, and some of this is really coming out in beautiful ways. So just give us a few minutes and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks. One of the biggest responsibilities we have as backyard poultry owners is to keep our flocks safe from predators. Sometimes this is easier said than done. Until now, costing only pennies per day to operate, Night Guard Solar is completely weatherproof and will provide complete predator protection for years to come, using daylight or sunlight to power itself. Order your Night Guard Solar lights today at nightguard.com. That's NITEGUARD.com.
If you're looking for a quality made chicken coop, then look no further than Horizon Structures. When you purchase from Horizon Structures, you can rest assured that your product is produced and delivered with the highest craftsmanship through traditional value, honesty, and integrity. All chicken coops are delivered fully assembled and ready to use right away. To pick out your new Horizon Structures chicken coop, visit horizonstructures.com. That's horizonstructures.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Mention the coupon code WHISPER and get 10% off your entire order. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks. Night Guard Solar would like to extend a special introductory offer to all the Chicken Whisperer listeners. Get 4 Night Guard Solar lights for just $100 plus shipping. That's a savings of $20. All you have to do is mention the coupon code WHISPER when you call an order. Take advantage of this great special right now by calling 1-800-328-6647. That's 1-800-328-6647, or visit them online at nightguard.com. That's NITEGUARD.com.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today and listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today, we've our special guest on the second and fourth Thursdays of every month, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Speaking of that, Richard, if you'll tell us and all our listeners how they can subscribe to Back Home Magazine and get all this great information that we talk about twice a month here on the radio sent to them in their mailbox, I believe it is every other month. If you'll tell them how we can take advantage of subscribing to Back Home Magazine, that would be great.
Yeah, okay. The annual subscription rate is $21.97, that's 6 issues. And you can either call us on our toll-free number. It's 800 972-2546, or you can visit us on the website, backhomemagazine.com, and there's secure online ordering there, and see our books, our back issues, our products, and all that stuff. And it's a pretty interesting little website. It has all sorts of information, and we've been in business since 1990, so there's a lot of back issues available as well.
Yeah, I've got to say too, it's a wonderful magazine. When did we first meet, Richard? It was quite a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, at least
it was in the 90s. Yeah, but I just got my recent issue of Back Home Magazine, and there's some really good articles in there. One of them is Living with Broody Chickens, which has some excellent advice in there. And then there's another one about planting your own victory garden. So, of course, we want people to plant these new neo-victory gardens with the chickens as chicken helpers. So, yeah, so the Back Home is a wonderful magazine. I highly recommend it to everyone listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
All right.
So we wanted to get back on to bio. I guess we were getting away from the – we're going to break away from the liquid fuel and talk about some of the other options in the more conventional solid fuels and biofuels. And as I said before, wood is probably the oldest one we have. I mean, wood is has been around forever, and we burn it, and we get heat out of it, and whatever, and you know, and of course we build things with it and all that. But as a fuel, it also can be. A lot of people don't realize this, but it can be used as an engine fuel. Now you might wonder how the heck that can happen, but there's a process called pyrolysis, and if you cut the wood into little chunks and you heat it in a container that is limited in the amount of oxygen available to it, like a drum, a barrel, a tank that is made so that it has a sealed cover and there's only a limited amount of oxygen allowed to get in there while it's being heated, it will decompose and essentially release the gases in it. The hydrocarbons within it will be released as a gas, which can then be collected and burned as just like natural gas would be burned. And in fact, as Pat had pointed out to me in a little brief conversation we had earlier in the week, that's sort of exactly what's happening with our carbon char type of process that we talked about, the biochar process we talked about few weeks ago. So essentially, this kind of it's called producer gas, or some people call it biogas. Well, that's also another kind of gas, which I'll talk about briefly in a few moments. But anyway, this is also a fuel that has been used in the past during emergency situations when gasoline hasn't been available. People have actually manufactured little portable units and have burned chunks of wood in a tank on the back bumpers of their automobiles and gone down the road with the process of burning wood in this tank behind their car, and the engine will take it. It's not as good as gasoline, it's not as clean as gasoline, but it will work. And I think probably the biggest use of this was during World War II, when Sweden was essentially blockaded from any — it was a neutral country, but it was blockaded from any inlet or out flow of any products. Petroleum could not get in, so people had to. There's a whole cottage industry of people chopping up big pieces of wood into little pieces of wood and burning them in tanks that they had built and installed on the backs, either in the back bumpers of their cars or on the roof or in the trunk or whatever they needed to do to get their cars going. And this went on for probably 5 years or so, and of course they were happy to get their fuel back at the end of the war, but it was also used in France and Germany and other places where all the liquid fuel went to the war effort, and the farmers and the citizens were sort of stuck with whatever they could get by with. And so I had done some work with this back in the early 80s and got a lot of information from that period, just how to build the containers, how to filter the material, how to take the water out of it, how to get the contaminants out and all that. And as I said, it works. It doesn't work great, but it works. It works okay. And in a stationary situation, as if you were running a generator or a sawmill or something like pump or something, it actually works pretty good because you don't have to worry about, your filters can be bigger and you don't have to worry about taking up all that room in the car. So, you know, that's another form of biofuel that a lot of people haven't really considered. Yet another form is methane, and this is the use of it's actually called biogas. It's actually the use of chicken manures, hog manures, cow, horse, sheep, just almost any kind of animal manure I can think of, and also even things like grass clippings usually what's considered compostable material can be put in it's a big vat or a concrete tank or a pit, whatever, and covered with either plastic or fiberglass or metal or greenhouse covering or whatever, and with the right mixture of carbon to nitrogen ratio, which is generally held to be about 30-1, green material and brown material, and a little starter material, which is just generally the bacteria that make it work, and the right amount of heat, and this doesn't even require heat input. You can use that heat input to get things moving a little faster, but once it gets going, it's going to generate its own heat. What comes out the other end? Yeah, what comes out the other end is just essentially a form of natural gas, and many people may not realize it, but the natural gas that we get pumped into our homes from the utility is really about 90% methane, and this process I'm talking about is methane. So with a little bit of plumbing and some storage capacity, you can generate your own natural gas, and it's done. It has been done for many, many years, and it's still done in India, Pakistan, parts of China. Many of the developing nations in the rural sections, they don't have that network. They don't have that plumbing and that blue pipe, underground piping that we use to distribute this stuff. So they just make it right on the farm from their own animal waste. And in fact, Israel and the kibbutzes, these are remote farms where they are out in a place where they really don't have the infrastructure. They pretty much have brought this to a science. I mean, when I was visiting there in the mid-80s, on the kibbutzes there in far reaches of Israel, that's how they got their energy. I mean, they basically generated it from methane right out of the cattle barns that they had. And they have a good engineering background, so they were able to really bring it to a science. And, it's not like it's something out of the 18th century. This is modern stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, that's where the compost comes in, of course, Richard, because the compost gives off gassing, of course, as well as the heat, and I think that's where, when I think of biofuels, I kind of put compost right in with that on the same subject area, I guess you'd say.
Oh, yeah. Essentially, composting is if you're feeding the soil and building the soil, by composting, you are growing plants, and by growing plants, you are actually growing fuel, because whether we eat it as fuel or whether we process it as motor fuel, it's still fuel.
Yeah. Well, an interesting, we've only got about, three minutes left. When I was looking into biofuels, I found that there was an article about turning wastewater into ethanol. And this is talking about taking raw sewage from cities and then treating it to where it comes out to be a green energy source to create the biofuel. And there's a company called Applied Green Tech that has prototypes that are working with this problem. Turning a problem into an asset. Again, all these materials have energy in them. And the other thing I found that what I loved, of course, because I drive one, but apparently there's 150 mile per gallon algae. I mean, we're talking green algae powered Toyota Prius. It's still in the research stage, but they're saying that the first algae fuel powered vehicle in the whole world was officially launched in San Francisco, and the car is called Algeus, A-L-G-A-E-U-S. It's a modified Toyota Prius, which derives its power from green crude. It's from the Sapphire Energies, and it runs at astonishing 150 miles per gallon. 150 miles per gallon, and they're aspiring to cross the U.S. on approximately 20 gallons of fuel sometime soon. I mean, that is just to me such a huge wow.
Pat, they could go around the world with all the green algae in my shower.
Oh, dear.
I'm just kidding. You said green algae. I had to think of something to say about that. So I was like, yeah, they could go around the world. Just come on over and clean out my shower. You'll be able to have fuel for a lifetime.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, that explains a lot, Whisper. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. Well, we've only got about 5 minutes left. Richard, any last things to kind of wrap up this amazing and exciting area of biofuels?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's probably the key thing is that it is no longer a science fiction fantasy. I mean, speaking of the algae, that's something that probably about 4 years ago, I remember reading about this, and it was, of course, all laboratory conditions and a lot of research, absolutely no commercial value at that time, and that was only for maybe 5 years ago. Now, I mean, we're talking about people actually looking at processing and possibly selling the compounds necessary to do this. There's investors lined up for some of this stuff. It's just like the alcohol. There are enzymes responsible for breaking down wood. And wood chips are also viable ethanol feedstocks. And at one point, the enzymes were so expensive to do it that, I mean, it could be done. It was done, as I said, it was done during the war when they absolutely had no aircraft fuel. The people had to actually make alcohol out of wood and coal and all sorts of stuff. But it's just so expensive. But now there's several companies, especially the Danes, Denmark is especially really gone forward with the enzyme research, and they have developed this stuff.
And not only that, but genetic modification. I mean, I read a couple articles about tobacco plants being able to produce solar cells from their modifications. So anyway, that's about all the time we've got for this now. Whisper, did you have anything you wanted to wrap up with? Any announcements coming up that you want to repeat?
Just that tomorrow is another episode of Fun Friday, so they can tune in. We'll have some great prizes we'll be giving away, and want to remind everybody that Saturday we will be broadcasting live here at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Roswell Garden Fair. And, of course, you can go to tractorsupply.com/chickdays. That's tractorsupply.com/chickdays. You get lots of great information about keeping chicks, including the first 6 videos that we've released for Tractor Supply. So you can take a look at that and, of course, become a fan on our Facebook page. Other than that, we appreciate everybody listening and greatly appreciate Richard coming on today as always. Always great and lots of wonderful information.
Yeah, Richard, thanks so much for sharing about biofuels. I mean, we could have even several more sessions just talking about some of the new possibilities that are coming along. So thank you so much for sharing this information.
Okay, well, we'll see you next time then with the composting.
Composting, absolutely. Okay. Well, in closing, are we ready to close out here, Whisper?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thanks again in closing to all our sponsors for their support, including Night Guard Solar and Mount Healthy Hatchery, Murray McMurray, Randall Berkey, Ideal Poultry, the list goes on and on, eggcartons.com, GQF Incubators, Creative Coops, Cackle Hatchery, Purina, Hoof and Hen Ranch. I mean, we're so honored to have these folks participating and sponsoring the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. Thanks. So much, Richard Frudenberger. You're always a treat to have on the show. Publisher and scientific editor of Back Home Magazine. And, of course, Whisper, happy birthday to you. I'm not going to cluck again because it got your sound all messed up. But from all of us in the chat room and certainly from all of us chickeneers all the world over, happy birthday and many, many happy more ones. Blessings to all, and may the flock be with you forever. God bless. Oh.